Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Sarah.
First things first, I always thank God for another day clean in the program for teaching me how to stay clean one day at a time. I swear to God, no one told me that I had a topic, right? And if they did, I didn't read that text. Desperation to passion. Thank God there was an, you know, I was sitting next to a book. I immediately read the chapter, right? And I'm like, well, it's fine, right? So my clean date is September 5th, 2002. And I share that because of that topic, right? That desperation that got me to Narcotics Anonymous, right, has turned into the passion with a life worth living, right? And that life that has been worth living has allowed me to stay clean for almost 22 years, right? And I'm super grateful for that, right? That I got here and stayed here. I know that, you know, that's not everybody's unique story. You know, a lot of people, relapse is a part of their story, but relapse is not a part of my story, right? When I got here, someone told me that I never, ever had to use again and that I didn't have to change my clean date, right? And I was just passionate enough to be inquisitive enough. And I think that that's one of the things that kept me around for my first like 5 years, because my first 5 years was fucking crazy, right? And I was inquisitive enough that when people would say shit like that, I'm like, well, what do you mean? How does that happen? How do I not change my clean date? What does relapse mean? What is a reservation, right? And so I would ask people like, what does that mean to you, right? Because I wanted the information. I wanted to be quantified enough to like keep my feet planted in Narcotics Anonymous, right? So I'm just gonna qualify real quick, because I'm an addict for sure. Like for certain, still to this day, no qualms about it. I'm an addict, right? And it still shows in many areas of my life. The most prevalent area of my life, the addiction and my that self-deceiving part of me where is that Sarah's not good enough, right? That Sarah is worthless, that I'm not pretty enough, I'm fucking fat, I'm not worthy of love, I'm not worthy, right? And the irony of it is that I'm the opposite for everybody that I love, right? I am loving, caring, and passionate about others, right? But I still fall short in that area for Sarah. So I'm from Oregon. I grew up in Oregon. I was definitely like, through step work, I can look back in my life. Like I remember being 5 years old and getting caught stealing Brock's candy at the grocery store. I was with the babysitter and she busted me as we walked out the front door and was like, you're lucky it's not the police, right? But she made me just give it back. And I remember like they're not being like, I don't think she even shared that with my mom, right? So I remember like as an early age, there being small things where I understood how to get away with shit, right? And that in the early phases of life, that's the shit that empowered me to like, that was the addict, you know, like brewing inside of me. I remember very clearly like she shared about shoes, like 56 is a small number. I have a 2-bedroom apartment because the second bedroom lives only for shoes, right? But on that topic, so I was probably 7 years old and it was just after Christmas. And so I'm in my 50s, right? So back then, you remember, I used to go to like JCPenney's or Sears to get the family pictures done, right? And so it was right after Christmas. My mom was taking us to JCPenney's to go get our pictures done. And I think she was gonna buy sheets or something, right? And I remember in the car right there, she was like, Sarah, we're going to the store to get pictures. I'm not buying you anything, right? And I remember being in the backseat of the car like, what does that mean? Like, okay. So 70s, it's the 70s. I was born in the 70s, right? So clogs were a thing, right? Remember clogs, right? So I told my mom I wanted clogs. And my mom was like, you are a klutz. There's no way I'm buying you clogs. You will break your leg. Like, it's not happening. So we go into JCPenney's and we enter in the shoe department. And that just right there, shoes everywhere, right? And by then, that obsession had already formed. My mom was the type of person, if she bought me an outfit, she bought me a pair of shoes that matched the outfit, right? So she's responsible for my addiction, really. So, and she knows it. She's done it to my nieces, my nephews, right? They're all shoe addicts, right? My niece, Georgia, thinks that the outfit has to have a matching pair of shoes. Anyways, and so the clogs are right there on the little end aisle, right? And I'm like, look, Mom. She's like, no. And I'm like, Mom. She's like, no. So she gathers me and my brother, Chris, and we're walking through the store. But the whole time I'm in there, that's all I could think about was those shoes, right? And in my little child head, I'm like, how can I convince this woman to buy me those shoes, right? And so we have to leave back out of the shoe department, right? So we handle our business. We take the stupid pictures, right, with the stupid background. And I think I made my brother cry that day. And anyways, and so when we're right there, I'm like, oh, look, these ones, they had a little strap on the back, right? So you wouldn't break your ankle, right? And I'm like, Mom, look, these clogs have a strap. She bought me the fucking shoes, right? And she said to me, I'm going to buy you these shoes, Sarah, but your birthday is not until March, and you cannot ask me for one more thing until March, right? And I remember sitting in the back of the car holding that shoe box and those shoes thinking, I can get away with anything I want for the rest of my life, right? And that is the addict that I am, right? Manipulation, lying, deceiving, controlling, right? Like, by any means, getting what I want was necessary, right? And I formed that idea as a little girl, right? And, you know, my story is my story, but, you know, like, I come from a middle-class family. My mom was a social worker. My dad was a therapist, right? I was provided for. My parents weren't addicts, you know what I'm saying? And so I know that for me, like, it was all that. It was that I was a spoiled, rotten, freaking brat, right? And there was also always this part of me as a child and into my teenage years where I just didn't really care, right? I remember being like I graduated high school, right? Like, I'm not quite sure how that happened, because by then the wet drug was my first love of choice, right? Like, I was drinking to a blackout in high school already and smoking weed every day and skipping school and doing all the things, right? Because I grew up in rural Oregon. And I remember, like, taking that test. I don't know if they still do it, where they make you do the computer test to see what you're supposed to be when you grow up, right? And it's spot on for who I am today, right? But I had no desire to be anything. I wasn't the girl that wanted to get married. I wasn't the girl that wanted to have kids. I didn't have, like, a career choice in mind. Like, I had zero aspiration in life, right? But I liked the get down of being bad. Right? I like the idea of doing shit that is dangerous. Like, in that part of me, even by the time I was 18 years, was deeply rooted in me. As soon as I graduated high school, I moved out of Newburgh and moved to Portland. You know, and then right after that, I moved to California, and I lived in Southern California for 22 years. It's where I got clean, and it is where I met every other addiction in life, right? Men, right? The mini hims. So my story is that I was with an active gang member for 10 years, right? And so that's who I became. I became the white girl that stole someone else's identity, that walked and talked like somebody else, that dressed like a gang member. For many, many years, I wore nothing but blue from head to toe. So when I got to Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and I was introduced to the drug life and that gangster life and, like, all those things. My favorite thing to do was to steal cars. I have 9 felonies for stealing cars. On my last run, so I'm super grateful. I have a huge group of friends that I used with. All of us made it to Narcotics Anonymous, and we've all stayed. And so one of my very best girlfriends, she's in the program, so I'm going to say her name. Her name is Michelle P. And she, the night that I got arrested the last time, so I was that person that would get arrested no matter what, right? I'd get arrested and they would let me out of jail for some godforsaken reason. They'd be like, Sarah, just report to probation. And I'd be like, sure, I will report to probation, right? I never, ever, ever reported to probation, right? But they would let me out of jail. And so my last day, the last using, so I ran around in Hollywood. I'm from Hollywood, California. And Michelle called me and she was like, Sarah, there's something weird going on in the area. There's something weird in the air and you just need to sit still somewhere. I'm going to put you in a hotel room. I'm going to pay for it for a couple of days. I'm going to give you some dope and just be still, right? And of course I had a stolen car, right? So I meet her at the hotel in the stolen car. She puts me in a hotel room that she paid for, but then she gave me like an ounce of dope, right? And so I'm sitting in this hotel room and I'm like getting high and I'm getting more high and I'm by myself and I'm trapped in this hotel room because she told me I had to stay, right? Well, so I got clean in 2002, right? So back then we still had Nextels. If you're old enough to know what a Nextel phone is, then God bless you. If you don't, ask someone older sitting next to you. So it was one of the very first cell phones that came out that had a fucking chirp action on it, right? So you could chirp people like a pager, like a walkie-talkie, right? So my phone starts chirping, right? And someone's like, hey, you got some dope, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, fuck yeah. So after the third call, I'm in the stolen car and I'm off and running, right? And I met my last demise that night, right? I was arrested like freaking Al Capone on the corner of Sunset and La Brea at midnight on Labor Day weekend, right? My saving grace was that every time I'd ever gotten arrested, I was in the Hollywood area or in the Los Angeles area. But in Hollywood, La Brea is the cutoff mark that marks you from Hollywood and West Hollywood. And West Hollywood is the sheriff's department. So I was arrested by the sheriff's department and I was taken to jail in West Hollywood. And then I would go to court in Beverly Hills, right? And so, the way that I like to tell the story is that prior to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have a God in my understanding. I didn't grow up in a home with a God. I wasn't taught about God. The only God that I ever knew was if I stayed the night at somebody's house on a Saturday night and went to church on Sunday. So I wasn't the addict in the corner or when the cops pulled up behind me, like praying to get out of it. It was always just, it is going to be what it is, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to go to sleep, and I'm going to get out. And if I don't, I guess I'm going to prison, right? And so, what I know today, because after 21 years of recovery and 21 years of step work, is that the God of my understanding was standing there amongst all those police the night that I went to jail, right? And the reason it was such a big to-do is because the car that I was driving, we had like stolen some millionaire's like identity and like actually gone to the Ford dealership and bought cars on someone else's identity. So when they busted me in that truck, they wanted to know who I was working with, right? But I'd been with a gangster for 10 years, right? So even when I sat in the jail that night and they were interviewing me, like, I knew not to say shit, like, you know what I mean? Anyways, so I ended up getting what they call in Los Angeles a county lid. So it was 365 days with no good time. And I also got a 5-year joint suspension, was told very explicitly by the judge that if I even got as much of his jaywalking ticket, that I would do that 5 years, right? But I also was told that I had to go from jail to treatment. And so I sat in jail for quite a while before they came to interview me for treatment, right? So people came to the jail, made sure you're a good fit for treatment, right? And so when I got, the day that I was released from jail, I was picked up by somebody that worked for a company that did that transport from jail to treatment, because I was an in custody release to treatment. And they took me to treatment on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And I'll never forget, because it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And in 2002, downtown Los Angeles was not the business, right? I'll never forget sitting in that man's car going, what in the heck, right? Why am I gonna go to, you're telling me like treatment, like I'm gonna get better. Like I'm gonna go in this building and I'm gonna somehow learn something about myself that's gonna somehow make life better. But what I'm seeing outside is like the Walking Dead, right? Like there's cardboard boxes and tents and filth and addicts everywhere shooting dope right on the corner in front of the treatment facility. And the man in the car, he said to me, yeah, you're going to go in there, and what's going to happen at some point is you're going to get introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. And so little did I know, he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? And so he took me in there, and by the grace of God, almost every person that worked in that facility was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Yep. And within the first week, someone was like, right down the street, two blocks at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings in the James Wood Center, there's a meeting called Clean on Skid Row, and you should go to that meeting, right? And I did, and I have never looked back. And, you know, desperation to passion, man, I sat in jail for 365 days, right? And even prior to that, because prior to getting sentenced, like, I had wrapped my head around the fact that this was the last run, right? I had wrapped my head around the fact that not only was I probably going to go to prison, but that I deserved to go to prison, right? And I remember, like, making that phone call to my mom, and I totally get what you said about your mom, right? Like, I didn't steal from my mom, but fuck, man, my mom was in Oregon, and when I wouldn't call for weeks at a time because of my addiction, wouldn't allow me to do so because I was so embarrassed of the person that I had become, that, you know, she would call the jails, right? She would call the hospitals, right? And then when I would finally call, I'd just hear it, just like she was just so grateful that I was alive, right? And because, you know, sometimes, like, Carmen, you know, she's heard it all, like the dirty, dirty, dirty part of my addiction and the really scary, scary stuff that I know that all of us probably have been a part of, you know what I mean? But how we make it out of that alive is just incredible, right? And what's most incredible to me as an addict, is for me, for Sarah, the most incredible thing is that how is it even possible to fathom, like, how do we go from that, the criminal, dope-shooting, junkie, piece of shit, right, to being introduced to a fellowship of people that hug you on day one, tell you to keep coming back, tell you we're going to love you till you can't love yourself, and to be all of a sudden becoming responsible members of society? That shit blows my mind, right? I remember, like, walking down the street one day and saying, what the fuck? Like, I haven't, like, broke the law. I am practicing integrity. Like, how does that? It's just, it's magic. Like, it's total, just, it, to me, it's so magical, right? That the most simplest thing happened, right, was that someone told me to go to a meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, and my entire life has changed. You know, and that topic from desperation to passion, I've lived that many times clean, right? So many, in 21, almost 22 years, like, life on life's terms have put me into some very, very desperate situations, right? Where it was only through the passion of being a member of Narcotics Anonymous that I made it out with, like, my sanity, that I stayed clean one more day, you know, because many things have happened, you know. In that treatment facility, I met the first recovering him. And I was with him for my first 5 years, and it was the worst thing in the world, right? And it was very public, and it was very in my face humiliating because he was a cheater, and he cheated with other women in the rooms, right? And but the thing that, like, the thing that happened for me when it came to relationships is, first of all, I remember doing my first 4-step, right? And I remember, like, the idea of, like, resentments and, like, those relationships and the ideas of, like, the fear of, like, working that first 4-step, because when you're new and you hear people, oh, the 4-step, oh, it's so scary, right? What I've learned to understand is that first 4-step was the easiest fucking thing I ever did, because it's just my story, right? Your first 4-step, you live to tell, right? What happens if you stay clean and you continue to work steps, because I'm the addict that has never put down the pen. I have worked the rounds, I'm on my 13th round of steps, right? I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor who has a sponsor that are all still clean, right? And so that first relationships thing, I thought that I had everybody to blame, right? Because when I talk about my dad, he's my stepdad, right? My biological dad and my mom divorced when I was very young. He married my babysitter. Like, I thought that I had these, like, reasons to be who I was, you know what I mean? It was only through step work that I understood that I became who I was through my own fruition, right? Through the choices that I made, through the ideas that I had, and through the lack of, like, caring and concern for Sarah, right? And so, you know, so that fourth step. So what happens, you guys, newcomers who haven't done it here, the humiliating part, right? The humiliating part is you stay clean and you have new relationships, right? And you have new things that happen and new resentments. And then you have to write about that shit, right? With clean time, where you're responsible for your behaviors, you know? And, you know, and so I thank God made it out of that first relationship with my clean time intact. I think that one of the things that fueled that relationship was that he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and we would battle over who was doing the step work faster and, like, who got something first. Like, he got a car, and I'm like, I'm going to get a better car. And so it, thankfully, me and him are friends today. Like, he is still my friend. And, you know, so... relationships have taught me so much, right? Not just the intimate ones, but I have so many friendships, right? I'm passionate about Narcotics Anonymous because of the people. Like, so passionate about, like, I love going to a meeting because I know I'm going to get hugs. I love going to a meeting because someone is going to embrace me and ask me if I'm okay. They're going to ask me how I'm doing. You know what I mean? And then it's that safe space to always be like, fuck no, I'm not okay, right? Or, you know, yeah, I'm doing really good. And, you know, I've been through a lot of stuff here. I made a decision about 10 years ago to leave California. I was tired of being on the struggle bus of, like, keeping up with the Joneses and working 7 days a week and overtime and all the things. And I made a decision to move back to California or move back to Oregon. And I did that for two reasons. So I had an older brother, his name is Chris, and me and his relationship had been difficult our whole lives, right? We're 3 years apart. I remember his childhood, like, we were very close. You know, I adored him, I looked up to him, like, and I always did, right? But there was always something about our relationship that was off, right? So I loved him as much as I hated him on a good day, right? And so when I made the decision to move back to Oregon, I traveled to Oregon because Portland was having their very first convention. And so I flew up there, and I remember being on the plane, and I was praying, and I asked God to show me something that would take me back to Oregon, right? To show me the fellowship was good enough, because when you're from Southern California, you're kind of snobby when it comes to Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because we have 1,000 meetings, right, and all these different areas, and 10 conventions that pop off any given year, right, and so I'm on the plane, and my grandmother had been sick, she'd broken her hip, we knew, you know, her time was short, and you know, I'd been gone for 20 years, and so my only other two niece, my niece and nephew that were older, were already older, right, I'd missed their whole lives, and so I came and I went to that convention and I was like, okay. And I remember going to my mom's house and I said, I think I want to move home. And she was like, okay. And she was like, well, have you ever thought about, you know, like applying for a government job? And I was like, oh no, I'm a freaking felon, right? And she was like, well, I think it's been a long enough time. And I'm like, well, okay. So I applied for some jobs in the county that I grew up with on that trip. And what also happened on that trip was I met my brother Chris's firstborn son. And his name is Rory. And he was just a couple months old and I fell in love, right? And so I went back to California and I met with my sponsor and I told my sponsor that I think it was time for me to go home, right? That I had grown up in Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, that's the thing is, like, that's the one thing that I have done is I have grown up. When I got to Narcotics Anonymous, I was a broken, broken little girl, right? And I was angry and bitter, and I didn't know how to speak. I had become so far removed from the girl that grew up in Newburgh, Oregon on a farm, you know, that I didn't even speak proper English anymore, right? Like, I was so broken, right? And for the first couple of years in Narcotics Anonymous, I walked around still wearing nothing but blue. And I made that transition back to Oregon, and 9 days later, my grandma died, but I got to be by her side, right? And I got to be a part of my nephew's life, and then my next nephew that was born. And then I met him, the next big him. So talk about, for from desperation to passion, right? You know, I shared that, you know, I never was that girl that wanted to get married or have kids. But the truth is that as I stayed clean longer, like, I wanted those things, right? I envied the women that had kids, and I envied the relationships and the love, right? Because I love to love. And so I met him when I was about 14 years clean, and he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and he had more clean time than me, and he swept me off my feet. And we had this amazing, like, relationship and engagement. We planned this beautiful wedding. And but in the midst of that, as the beginning phases of that, that brother of mine was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And the irony of all of that, right? So you're, like, stuck in the balance of experiencing this grand love, right? And in the opposite side, I was in the most immense pain that I'd ever experienced, right? My brother's my only biological sibling. And so I was also on a ninth step when that happened, right? So the first day that I found out my brother had cancer, I called my sponsor right away and was like, hey. In that moment in my life, I hated my brother. And I hadn't spoken to him in almost a year. And so my sponsor was like, well, I think it's kind of ironic. Like, I always say that my God has jokes. Like, he's always like, ha ha, I'm going to test you, right? And so my sponsor was like, well, I think it's funny that you're on the ninth step, right? Because it's time for you to make amends. And you're going to have to do it the living way, right? It's not going to be through a letter. It's not going to be through words. It's going to be through action. And so my brother survived his cancer 19 months. And I took him to his radiation and his chemo every Friday on my day off. And so in that trip, you know, he would be, his cancer was, it was metastatic, so it was all through his skeleton, right? So it was breaking his bones, and, you know, it was incredible to watch, you know, a man go from looking like the average 50-year-old man to looking like he was 100 years old in that time. And but so in those car rides, we hashed out our whole life. Right? We talked, we told stories, and we made amends, right? And he was able to walk me down the aisle on my wedding day. And then the irony of all that is that, you know, like, the weird thing about all that is that marriage didn't last, right? Me and him are divorced. Right? And so what I know today is that God gave me that, though, right? He gave me that time with my brother where he was able to experience the joy of my happiness and experience the joy of me being clean and to be present for my wedding, right? Because I think he had the best time at my wedding. My wedding was 250 people, and they were all addicts, right? And they were loving on him so immensely that day. So from desperation to passion, you know, when I made a decision on my 20th birthday, at my 20th birthday party, I announced to my entire party that I was leaving my husband and going to get a divorce. And because I figured it was the best way to get the gossip out, right? And it was, though. It knocked it in the butt, right? And so... So I immediately knew that, like, that was, you know, that, again, was that moment in your recovery, that moment in your life, right, that life on life's terms where you got to kick recovery into overdrive, right? And I, you know, I dug my feet in, and I asked myself, and I got back into the step work, and I asked myself again, like, what do you want out of life? And here's the thing, is that you guys, that Narcotics Anonymous has taught me never to give up, right? And it's taught me never to give up on many things. I'm not a bitter, broken girl, right? I am a proud woman who believes in love and knows that when my day comes, that I'll be able to experience that again, right? And in the meantime, my job is to make sure that I'm prepared for that next relationship and prepared for that next great love, right? Because the steps continue to show me that. And the people in Narcotics Anonymous continue to believe in me, right? And so that part about me, like me being my own worst enemy, right, that I shared in the beginning, like that's the part that I'm really working on. In December, I flew down to California to do step work with my sponsor, and I did this really empowering first step. And because when you've been clean a while, the steps you don't do, step work and guide no longer fits into your lifestyle, right? And so I did the step, and this first step, and I'm just going to read just real quick, and I know I got the time. And so working the steps requires a combination of willingness to change, surrender, and sometimes desperation. The knowledge that the steps will change us is where we find hope in what we know, and we do, and even when we do not know where it will lead us. Accepting our powerlessness and levels of unmanageability are not enough. We must surrender the reservations we hold on to about the behavior or the mindset and work through the letting go and with anything even associated with grief. And then we are able to continue on to the next step, right? And so right as I was leaving that marriage, I was doing that step, right? And so, you know, I just told myself, you know, I just don't want to be bitter, and I just don't want to be angry, and I'm not going to be that woman that runs around Narcotics Anonymous bashing his name and telling people what happened in my marriage. The people who love me, know what happened in that marriage, right? And that's enough for me. So I'm just going to close with this. When I was new, I was at a Greater LA convention, and I was sitting with my girlfriend Charlene, and I was talking shit about that first hymn that I talked about, and I was talking shit, right? And unbeknownst to me, his grand sponsor was sitting right in front of me, and so he turns it around and he says, "You must be Sarah." And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And he was like, "Well, I'm so and so's grand sponsor," and I was like, "Oh." My God. I remember like recoiling. He was like, no, I know him, right? And I didn't hear anything that probably wasn't true. And he was like, "But I'm going to tell you something about recovery, Sarah." He said, "You know, you got to learn how to dance in the rain, right?" He said, "Recovery does three things. And there's three things you need to know about recovery. You are either preparing for the storm, you're in the midst of the storm, or you're coming out of the storm. I'm Sarah and I'm an addict." Woo! Oh, God.